Do you need this?
Yeah, I need everything here.
It's time for The Buzz on KFAR Radio, brought to you by Good Titrations off Merhar Avenue, home to the country's first cannabis cafe. Now it's time for The Buzz.
All right, welcome to The Buzz. This is Sean Tackey and co-host Brandon Emmett.
What's up, what's up?
This is brought to you by Good Titrations, offering the highest highs at stone sober prices. And we have a special guest with us. We have Patrick Donaldson, who's from Harka Architecture. He actually helped us design our cannabis cafe retail manufacturing facility over there at 506 Merhar Avenue. And he actually came up to get some pictures of our of his and ours establishment to get a little bit of exposure. Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, thank you.
It's great to have you.
What's up, Pat?
Good to be here. Good to be back to Alaska.
Back to Alaska. How often have you been to Alaska?
Well, I was born here, so I guess not Fairbanks, but Anchorage, the big city. Grew up here a little bit, lived up here from 97 to 04 before I moved back to where I moved down to Portland.
Excellent. Right on. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'd like to hear a little bit more how you got into architecture and stuff. There's a lot of things to dig in on that.
Right? Yeah. Wow. A lot to unpack there. You know, a lot of psychological stuff.
He was born at a very young age.
Yeah. Well, I'll start from the beginning. First, there were the dinosaurs. I got into it in high school a little bit, sort of getting into technical drawing, nerding out on that, and then ended up going to a liberal arts school in upstate New York and kind of got into it on the backside. Went to architecture school in St. Louis and then ended up moving back up to Anchorage. Worked for a couple big firms in Anchorage. Ended up going up on the slope a bit, doing construction management on the Alpine pad. And then ended up moving down to Portland in 04. My career was sort of going more in a sustainable direction. I was sort of really drawn to that. And so in doing, you know, kind of Anchorage was, it was still a fight with everyone at that point in the late 90s there. So I ended up going down to Portland where it was a little bit more at the forefront of things. And so I worked at a couple firms there. And then I started my own outfit called Harka. It was 2015 now. So we have five architects, / designers and one office person and myself. So we've blown up almost, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome, Pat. So what's Harka mean?
Yeah. So, I spent some time in Nepal before I moved to Portland, and was in a couple of different villages there, and one of the villages I spent the most of my time in all the little kids sort of kind of created a nickname for me. Harka Bahadur Padre was the full name, which loosely translates to Happy Warrior Fart Man.
Nice.
So the Harka part is the happy part.
Okay, that's not the fart part.
Yeah, it's not the fart part. You know, I would make fart noises to kind of make the kids laugh, which is universal, turns out. But also, you know, it's a pretty heavy lentil diet there. So, you know, there was some real ones mixed in.
So that's awesome.
Earned my name.
That's cool.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I think this interview discussion with you is a really good transition from our last show. Mm-hmm. We talked mostly about on-site consumption last time, the rules, the regulations, how we ultimately got to where we are now, how we're able to bring that to the finish line. So it's cool having you here to talk about not just architecture in general, but how you've applied what you've learned to cannabis facilities and then to our facility in general. And it's interesting how we met. Mm-hmm. You know, we had this idea for an on-site consumption facility. Yep. We wanted a really beautiful cafe space. And so we searched the internet. Yep. And,
Came across Harka.
Yeah, we came across your work. And we thought, wow, this is the look mm-hmm. that we really want for our facility. We think that your style would bring, you know, our kind of Alaskan cannabis friendly vibe to reality. And so we hit you up. So could you tell us a little bit about how you got into doing architecture for the cannabis space, and then maybe touch a little bit on the beginnings of our project?
Yeah. I got into it during the recession. Knew a lot of people that were in the cannabis industry. Things were really slow in the architecture industry. And so it sort of became, I just sort of connected with a bunch of people in that industry. And when the recession started to change, people were looking for permits. So people who, once it was legalized in Oregon, you had everybody kind of what I sort of refer to as like people coming out of their basement, you know, like kind of everybody was just kind of like, the basement dwellers were coming up to the above surface. and so we basically, I was tapped by people who just sort of in the network were like, hey, I want to open up a thing. I need a permit. So we permitted the very first indoor grow, rec grow in the city of Portland.
Wow.
It might even have been in the state of Oregon. I'm not really sure, but it was definitely in the city. So, you know, it was one of those things where I went in and got a permit like that because the city still didn't even have, it was so new, the city didn't even have the rules kind of set up yet. And then it turned into a whole thing with rules and regulations. But we've done probably about 15 grow operations in different areas of the West Coast mostly. And then we started getting into the retail, mainly because I think it's a little more fun. The folks that work for me probably enjoy it a little more. And it's a little more hands-on, experiential, things like that. So the grow operation is really more of industrial design. So I kind of nerd out on the energy calculations and nerd out on all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the retail is more fun because it's more tactile and we can sort of experience it. Everybody can kind of experience it to a certain degree. So we kind of proudly talked about the fact that we did do cannabis work, even though we do have quite a mix of work between retail and residential, which is on fire right now because of COVID still. But we shifted to the more to that retail, and we put it up on our website. And so I think that's probably how you guys found us, is because a lot of architects are still pretty conservative, and we're sort of maybe a little nervous to put that on their website. So we've had quite a few cold calls like that. So, so we've been starting now to market that a little more, and looking to go nationally on the stage, because we have a lot of experience on the West Coast. That's because it's been going on for some time. We've learned a lot of things about how it evolves. So we can bring that knowledge to someone who's starting out in a new state where the rules are new and they're not sure how to navigate it, because it's a changing, as you guys have probably experienced, it's a changing, the needle changes quite a bit as the rules evolve, and they evolve pretty quickly.
Yeah. And you're actually listening to you're just tuning in with us. You're listening to The Buzz on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live on KFARradio.com with Brandon Emmett, Sean Tackey here, and Patrick Donaldson from Harka Architecture. And Patrick, how many different retails or different states have you designed in now, and like kind of the difficulty in having so many different regulations across different states?
You know, most of what we've done has been in Oregon. We did one in Connecticut most recently, called Fine Fettle, which is a medical facility in Connecticut. And so that was probably the strictest place we've been, but we're also familiar with the rules in Washington because we're so close to Portland, being so close to the state. The Fine Fettle one was interesting because they had to actually have licensed pharmacists on site.
Oh, wow.
And only so many people could work under each one. There was tons of really draconian rules on how to like enter the facility and all the checkpoints that you had to go through. And so, yeah, basically what we do is we read through the rule sets. We kind of absorb what we do. We actually communicate with their lawyers to find out like, okay, you know, what's your read on this? Because we might have a different read. And then we sort of apply it. And the way we look at it is, here are the rules today. And a great example of this is in the state of Washington, and this was also true in Connecticut. You couldn't actually be in the same room as cannabis, even if under glass. Like, you couldn't look at marijuana like in real life. You could only look at photographs of it And then you'd speak to a bud tender. They would put it into a tablet, and then you went into another room, and it was a prepackaged item that came in a black bag, and then you couldn't actually look at it until you were in your car. So it was this kind of strange rule that I'm not sure why it existed, but it did. But we knew that
it is the devil's lettuce. You know, if you look upon it, it will bring you to Satan.
People running around screaming M in the street. It was predicted back in the day.
Hide your wives, hide your husbands. You know, we're coming for you.
Fire.
You
know? So I think that's why the rules change. Is people are super concerned about what could possibly happen, so they set up these heavy rules, and then after a couple months they realize, okay, these are kind of silly rules, maybe we should relax these rules. And so those are the sorts of things where we'll design a facility in sort of phases, where we'll say, okay, phase one is meets these rules today, really nice facility, works for everything you guys got going on, and then we're going to predict phase two, which will be when they loosen some of these rules. So we could take down this wall, we could open up this door, we can take out this room without having to remodel the entire facility. It's almost made to adapt to the rule changes that we know are going to come at some point.
Well, and we ran into some of that in our facility too. So as you know, the rules for on-site consumption require us to have a completely separate ventilation system, and so that's something that you had to work through with us, because we had a system where we have the retail space itself, we've got the grow, and then the on-site consumption all right next to one another, and they can't share ventilation. So maybe talk us through a little bit some of the challenges that this, you know, first on-site consumption facility presented, and how you worked around them.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, your project was really interesting and fun and challenging for a lot of reasons, just because you guys had all the elements in one building. So that was new for us, but the fact that we had that experience in the grow world helped, I think, a little bit, you know, us sort of understand how a grow works. We're not growers, so but we definitely sort of understand the conversation. And then the whole, we do lots of retail cafes and things like that, so it plugged in almost perfectly as a crossover with everything you guys had going on. But figuring out, I think, a lot of like the experience of it, because it almost is like a museum. I'm not like a museum, but it is kind of a, with the idea of tourism and this idea of like having this kind of show grow.
And the show grow central to the facility.
Totally. Like this is the heart of it. It all starts here. So you walk in, you see the plants behind the glass. It's this really interesting, like, whoa, you know, a lot of people have never seen marijuana growing in front of them, which seems crazy now, but it still exists. Yes. And so, you know, people then can study that. The idea, and I hope you guys follow through, was just having some interpretive elements at that stage, showing growing in different facilities, videos and things like that, so people could actually understand it, understand some of the medical benefits of it. All of that conversation could happen at that entry area. And then from there, you have the choice to go and go to the dispensary or go to the cafe, which I know part of it was sort of having these different ideas of the cafe being more kind of chill and warm and relaxing, where the dispensary wanted to be more, I don't want to say high pace, but a little bit more retail driven, brighter, cooler surfaces, things like that. So sort of adapting how you emotionally experience you know, certain experiences when you're going in to buy something that you might be a little nervous about, or something as a first-time user or buyer, and how you kind of make it real, but also make it special and nice materials.
Absolutely. And actually, this is a great spot for a commercial break right now. So we'll take a little couple minutes, and you're listening to KFAR Radio, the heartbeat of Alaska.
More of The Buzz will continue right after this.
Since legalization, Good Titrations has been producing the finest products that you now enjoy legally, with products throughout the state of Alaska. Well, now Good Titrations has their own retail store right here in Fairbanks at 506 Merhar Avenue, just off the Johansson, a full cannabis retail shop, including products in flower, edible, and concentrate form, plus accessories, and an impressive group of bud tenders that can help match the right product just for you. And coming soon, Fairbanks' first cannabis cafe, courtesy of Good Titrations off Merhar Avenue. Online at goodtitrations.com. License number 10827.
Marijuana has intoxicating effects and may be habit-forming and addictive. Marijuana impairs concentration, coordination, and judgment. Do not operate a vehicle or machinery under its influence. There are health risks associated with consumption of marijuana. For use only by adults 21 and older, keep out of reach of children. Marijuana should not be used by women who are pregnant or breastfeeding.
This message is brought to you by Good Titration.
License number 20827.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Now, back to the Buzz on KFAR Radio, brought to you by Good Titrations.
All right, welcome back to the Buzz. I'm Sean Tacky, here with Brandon Emmett, co-host, and our good friend Patrick Donaldson from Harka Architecture, and we're discussing developing and designing our building with the guy that did it, and the difficulties he has with blending them in multiple ideas. We had a little bit of different thoughts on how things should look. I definitely was the mindset of having a clean cut Apple design mentality, figuring we're coming from a laboratory. We need to kind of show a clean, open environment. And I'm an Apple products aficionado, so definitely lent to their desires.
I'm the new school hippie surfer guy who's totally comfortable sleeping in the dirt, and kind of like the whole natural products retro sort of feel, and so balancing those two concepts was a challenge that we presented to Patrick, and he managed it seamlessly. So could you touch on that a little bit, Patrick, how you took Sean's very modern idea for our facility and my very earthy retro sort of perspective on a cannabis facility, and then made them come together in something that everybody thinks is beautiful.
Yeah. Well, we've done quite a bit of work with communities, multifamily communities, things like that. And so learned how to sort of hear different voices and how to kind of bring them together. In your project specifically, it was almost made a little easier because we had these separate rooms, so we could kind of almost treat them differently, and sort of touching on that earlier, where the retail is a little bit more like the Apple store, and the lounge kind of is a little more earthy and a little more grounded. And so that was kind of like it made that part easy, but then you could kind of take some elements from each and kind of bring them together to sort of tie the two together. Like, I think the carpets tie together fairly well, and we had some other elements that I think, you know, originally we had this design that had this kind of wood ribbon that was going to tie everything together, but you know, budgets be budgets.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of cut a few things, but
that was a pretty expensive project.
Yeah, it was. But you know, it
COVID
did
be damned.
Yeah, really. It turned out, I think balancing that is something that we do as architects. I think good architects are, you know, they need to be able to listen and hear those things and be able to manage that. You know, we do a lot of projects for single family homes for couples, and that will sometimes be a challenge too, like husband, wife, or partners, where they're like, oh, this is what I want, and you know, oh, this is what I want, and so you have to be able to kind of get them both what they want in a certain, you know, to a certain degree, and bring it across. So warming up modern design is kind of what we do. It's kind of the Pacific Northwest thing, is design that has got some warmth and some humanity to it, and it's not this cold, you know, white box.
Absolutely, yeah. I like the fact that we were able to blend those two together. We still have the earthy aspect, where we still have like wood, epoxy wood counters that still are really clean, brought to the retail side of it, and also like the same epoxy tables into the cafe area, along with still having TV screens absolutely everywhere. I mean, that's kind of my mentality. I wanted a sports bar aspect in a way in the cafe, but still have a separate rustic lounge space that's void of those TVs. So you did a good job on that front.
Yeah, thank you.
And speaking of the sports bar aspect, so we are playing
the Olympics.
The Olympic Games on
nearly all, every TV.
Yeah, six of our eight TVs, three different channels. So if you want to watch the Olympics, come into Good Titrations. We've got it on 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. 7 days a week. So Olympic Central at Good Titrations. Yeah, come smoke a bowl and cheer on Team USA.
And shout out to Lydia Jacoby for her gold medal win for Seward,
yeah.
Alaska.
Oh, yeah. That was yeah.
Awesome. So cool. So
Alaska exciting. Gold medalist at 17. That's pretty awesome.
Yep. It was great to see the cafe cheering and shouting and clapping for her when she won last night. So.
Yeah.
Almost as cool as opening your own dispensary.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
So a little bit more on the design, how to meld some of those ideas and like sustainability aspect. I know that that's a focus of Harka, is wanting to do sustainable products and like coming up with that. It's a little bit more expensive. So there was some push and pull on working with you because, you know, we couldn't afford everything. Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons I started Harka was we were making lots of choices, and we do this as humans, right? We make choices every day about, you know, where I'm going to take a vacation, what I'm going to eat for dinner, how I'm going to get to work. And they all have impacts on the environment, some more than we realize. And I think part of it was we're making choices a little bit without a lot of knowledge and understanding of what we're doing, what the impact is. So one example of that is, I want to really super insulate my home, so I'm going to use, I'm going to spray foam every little corner in my house, and I'm going to lower my utility bills, and I'm going to save the planet because I'm using less energy. And in some areas, such as, you know, Portland, Seattle, we get most of our energy from hydro and renewables. So it's like 50% hydro renewables. So when you look at the life cycle analysis of the carbon impact of spray foam, and you look at the toxicity of spray foam, which has a lot of off-gassing, the life cycle analysis shows that it'd actually be better to use a different insulation, something that was less insulative, right? That had a lower R value, because of the life cycle analysis of that carbon. So it made me those sorts of things made me realize, okay, we're making choices from the hip here. We're not really kind of looking at the impact of what we're doing in the big picture. And so that made me think, okay, the measure of things we need to look at is carbon. And then also toxicity, right? Because we get into these homes. And you know, Fairbanks learned that in the 80s about toxicity. So you guys know about it more than most people in the country. And so that was the big focus. And so when we kind of tie that into the cannabis side of things, it kind of ties into people's branding, right? Because it's kind of easy in a lot of ways because cannabis is a natural product, or, you know, should be.
Mostly.
It should be.
It's a plant.
Yeah, it should be. But that's usually where people take their branding, is kind of that natural, organic, you know, vibe of things, you know, that earthier, that's kind of just where the industry is. There are people out there doing the Gucci shops and the plastic looking shops, which, you know, they're cool to look at and they're fun. Our goal is to look at not just like, okay, what's the most thing that's going to save the most energy, but what's got the least embodied carbon in the materials, and then the toxicity that are in the materials, and how that looks in the life cycle of that facility, but also how we can affect the actual brandings to a certain degree in terms of packaging. So that was one of the things that regulatory agencies don't really think much about. Like, one of their things is like, oh, you got to have it in like this, you know, joint tube, and then that's got to be in another bag that's lockable, and then, you know, there's all these layers of plastic that you need to provide for, you know, child safety and things like that. But what is frustrating about it is that you see these tubes laying on the ground because someone pulls it out and starts smoking a joint and then throws the tube. And so, there are options out there for using, you know, compostable products, things like that. So our next stage is to sort of get more involved in the branding of people's stuff, to sort of so we can affect that a little bit more, because that actually has, you know, potentially has a bigger effect than what, you know, what we've done to the building.
Right, and that's actually kind of a difficult thing that we've come across, is trying to find packaging that is comparably priced, is, you know, less of a carbon footprint into the environment. I mean, we're doing our effort right now. We collect back the joint tubes that people consume on our inside the retail, inside the cafe, and looking at a way to be able to reuse those or recycle them in some fashion. But that's one of the difficulties we've come across. I mean, especially like one of our biggest products is our vape pens, and those cartridges are like damn near zero ability to recycle them. And we've had so many people take an effort on figuring out how to recycle those, because we want to use them because they just go to waste. It's like single use. I mean, you can unscrew the top and fill it back up and use it a couple times, but it's a high turnover frequency, or high amount of waste.
Yeah, because those things are too fussy the way they're built, and that's really a sort of the core of the problem, I think, is that we are tooled to build stuff out of plastic, so that's the cheapest. That's how we figure out how to make it. And so when we have this problem with folks where we're saying, hey, look, here's a really high quality window made out of fiberglass or wood, and then here is a vinyl window, right? That price makes it hard to go with this better product, because you're like, man, that's like almost half as much. Why would I get this fiberglass window, even though it's going to have better longevity? It's kind of, the production of it was less intensive, less carbon. You get a better product, but when you've got this to compare the plastic tubes, right, it's hard to say, yeah. So you really have to commit to the idea and say, all right, we're going to take, you know, what you guys are just starting, so it's hard to say that, but it's like, once you get going, it's like, okay, we're going to commit to this and we're going to make it happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Each marginal decision, spend a little bit more to actually change yourself in the direction.
And that is something that we have tried to focus on at Good Titrations. Granted, we do have some of the confines of the regulations. We've had some of the confines of being a new business, but we have tried to use products both in, you know, what we use for our wholesale sales, and also in bringing on a company like Harka to try to be an environmentally conscientious company, because we know that the cannabis industry is not the most environmentally conscientious industry. And so trying to use architecture that is a little more friendly, trying to use products like steel and glass versus plastic has been at the core of our business, but there's still some real struggles going forward between both regulation and cost savings. So
yeah, for sure.
All right, well, this is actually going to bring us to the end of our show. Everyone can stick around for part two, because we have more to talk about with Patrick on the next episode of The Buzz. But you've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com. KFAR Radio, the heartbeat of Alaska. To hear the show again or any other past episodes, go to the archives file at kfarradio.com. And please stick around for Health Talk with Dr. Looper after this.
You've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com. Sponsored by Good Titrations. To listen to this episode or any past programs, simply go to the website and search the archives page. The Buzz has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active.